Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1.
A texter says, apropos of Taylor, re-recording all her albums despite her publisher is worthy of Larry David. Massive kudos. I don't think she's completely driven by spite, but I take your point, texter. Elizabeth emailed say, I just wanted to say, I was in a shop recently and they've launched a new app. And they said to me, would I like to get the new app on my phone? Then they said, OK, so Elizabeth is an older person. Then they said, I'm sure somebody would help you to do this, dear. I said, just give me the leaflet and I'll scan the QR code. And the girl looked amazed and said, oh, you're the first person that's actually able to do that. So there you go. Old people should be open and we should be open about them as well, is probably the message. Now, time for our entertainment preview. I'm joined today by Kay Sheehy, series producer on RTE's Arena, and Owen Sweeney, TV and radio producer. Good afternoon, guys.
Good afternoon.
Before we get to the proper stuff, Kay, very briefly, I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here is starting tonight on ITV and Virgin Media 1
at
9 o'clock.
Yes, and I suppose the big stars are going to be Richard Madeley, who a lot of people say was the archetype that Alan Partridge was created from. And believe it or not, he is up for one of the first Bush Tucker trials. As you can imagine, what I like about it is the power of the people watching. So they always know who to pick on to go through the most awful trials. And you can imagine every sheep in North Wales, because this time it's in North Wales, not in Australia, will be holding on to their private parts, because you know that's what the contestants will be forced to eat.
Okay, we're going to move on quickly from that image, Kay, of nervous sheep in Wales. Owen, you were laughing as soon as Richard Madeley was mentioned, like just the very mention of his name.
Oh, he's brilliant. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they started in Granada TV in Manchester, which is obviously Steve Coogan's home patch, so he was very much the touchstone, along with the likes of Tony Wilson and those kind of exuberant moments for Alan Partridge. So, yeah, he's always good copy, isn't he? And David Ginola's in there as well, or David Ginola, for those who remember soccer in the 90s. That's about the extent of my knowledge now, Brendan.
Excellent. But look, it'll be Richard Madeley unscripted and off the leash is always a good idea. Now, Kay, King Richard, which is the story of Venus and Serena Williams and their dad, starring Will Smith, is out this week and it's getting great reviews.
And worthy. It's really, really good. Will Smith is, you know, he's such a good comedian and he's great in things like The Men in Black, but really, like in Ally and now in this King Richard, he can really inhabit a role. And, you know, I don't know Richard Williams very much, but he's that kind of dour person that you used to see on the centre court at Wimbledon. And you felt a bit like Andre Agassi's father. You thought, did he tie bats to the children's hands when they were young to make them play tennis in the cot? But no, Richard Williams is just this. He came from a poor background in Louisiana. He now is living in Compton. He has 5 daughters and he has a plan. He has a 70-page plan. And the plan is that 2 of his daughters, not 1, but 2, are going to be world champion tennis players. And one of the coaches he meets says to him, hey, that's like thinking you're going to have 2 Mozarts in the house. And so it came to be. They live in Compton, as you know, from the rap music, how poor Compton is. So he goes around in his red minivan. He takes Serena and Venus to the poorest tennis courts where the drug gangs are circling outside. He has a supermarket trolley with all these old tennis balls that he's collected from country clubs. And even late into the night, in the rain, he plays tennis with them. And equally, his wife, Brandy, is an athlete. So they're all training. And Venus finally gets a trainer. And then you see that Serena is a little left out, but he encourages them all. And when he gets the coach and when they move to Florida, he keeps interrupting them because he wants these kids to have a real life as well as being tennis stars. It's okay. Kind of the Rocky Balboa school of, you know, the goodwill out. But Will Smith sounds is like so brilliant in this.
Great. Sounds like just the kind of inspirational thing we need at the moment.
Absolutely, yeah.
Of course, I probably would have been, if he was my father, I probably would have been a tennis champ as well. Or you. Clearly,
absolutely.
It's all come to, is your father driven enough? Now, listen, we have a rom-com heist set in lockdown. Mm-hmm. Okay, so obviously this was going to happen. It's on Sky Cinema this weekend. Is it any good?
It's all right. It's good in parts. It is worth watching. I have two main questions for you. Firstly, I suppose, Brendan, is do you want to watch a film not only set during the recent lockdown, the first iteration thereof last March and April last year, but also filmed and, I suppose, well, they say written during that time period as well. So it's quite a hurried project. Is it too soon? That's the question you have to ask yourself.
And I would say, I've been watching the second series of The Morning Show on Apple, which does happen as COVID unfurls itself. Mm-hmm. And actually, it's not too soon. It's great. You actually think, oh God, remember that? And remember those feelings? It brings you right back there in a kind of a good and bad way. Yeah, so I'm ready.
It's a question of, those lockdown streets, if that's too soon a memory or if you can kind of put that distance there and out psychologically as much as anything else. And the other one is the question I have here is how do you assemble a cast at a time like this featuring Anne Hathaway, Chiwetel Ejiofor, Ben Stiller, Ben Kingsley, Mindy Kaling, Mark Gatiss, Stephen Merchant and Lucy Boynton. Well, the answer is you put half of them on Zoom, effectively. So that'll give you an idea. Now we're into lockdown. Locked down, should I stress. The movie that's on Sky Cinema this weekend. I can't imagine going to the cinema to watch this. On TV, it's okay. It starts, I guess the heist bit in a second, but it starts with this sequence, needless to say, of a Zoom call. In fact, Brendan, they're at pains to point out and reference by name Zoom, Skype and FaceTime all within the first 5 minutes of the film, in case anyone gets offended. The screen freezes, the doorbell goes, it's the delivery.
Stuff. I don't need to see a film set on Zoom,
right,
for God's
you're
sake.
You're right back into it. It's not all in Zoom because thankfully Chiwetel Ejiofor and Anne Hathaway are a couple living together in lockdown. Their relationship is falling apart. A lot of stuff, it's quite play-like, as a lot of these films are, I suppose, and for obvious reasons. They're occupying the same house, but they're kind of, the relationship is to use an Alan Partridge-ism, moribund. And, but a lot of it has happened off camera, and a lot of it has happened in the past, and you kind of believe they were, turbulent young lovers, and kind of they've settled down. He's disgruntled because he's a delivery driver, Brexit overtones already, and he can't get ahead in life because he had a criminal conviction 10 years prior. She, however, has done very well in the corporate world and is kind of sold out, and she's kind of feeling disgruntled for that reason, and they're kind of growing apart, but here they are stuck in the house. Now, wait till you hear the flimsiness of the heist plot. She has a whole kind of gig there with a £3 million diamond in Harrods. Of course, Harrods has to get rid of everything because of lockdown, so they need to get it out. They've sold it to some unnamed buyer who runs a very nasty, or leads a nasty regime in some unnamed country, and he's buying this £3 million diamond. However, there's an exact replica on display in Harrods as well as the one in the vaults. They could swap the two. They send it. No, hang on. This is good stuff. They send it to Wall Street. No one's ever going to look at it because of lockdown.
You're ruining this for me. No. I think this is a perfectly good hour and a half that I don't have to leave the house. I don't want to know anymore. I've got the gist.
Will they do it, Brendan? That's the question. Will they do it?
I'm glad there is still a question.
But that's it. It's will they do it? The flimsiness of the plot, but there's some very nice, there's some very good lines in it.
And look, I'd watch anything with Stephen Merchant in it, in fairness.
They're going to give, what I love about this, and this is the point, they're going to split £3 million if they do it, one each for themselves and million to the NHS, Brendan, to the NHS. That's how on message it is.
Okay, save me from this. A bit of quality cinema.
I have panorama, I have a deep plot, I have, deep psychology. This is from the piano director Jane Campion. It's called The Power of the Dog, and it's in cinemas now, but on Netflix from December the 1st. Now, Jane Campion hasn't made a movie in about 10 years. She did the series Top of the Lake with Elizabeth Moss, brilliant, in 2013. So The Power of the Dog is a Western, but it's a different kind of a Western. It's a bit like, Giant or The Legend of the Fall, kind of modern Western. It's like everybody's settled, everybody everybody's now trying to make money from all the roving steers they did all their lives. So it's 1925. It's Montana. It's actually made in New Zealand. The Wild West are being modernized, and we meet two rancher brothers, the boorish Phil, played surprisingly by Benedict Cumberbatch, with the awkward but kind George, played by Jess Pellmans. And George's character wants to rise in society, while Phil likes nothing more than dirt. He loves being out with his horse, breaking the horse. He loves being dirty himself. He never washes. So when George meets Rose, who works in runs her own cafe, she used to play the piano in the cinema. She's got a very sensitive, beautiful son called Peter, who loves nothing more than making beautiful artificial flowers. And George falls for Rose, marries her, brings her back to the ranch, where who's waiting for her but Phil? And Phil is not happy that George has brought back this woman who he feels is a fortune hunter. She is also now going to share the bed with George, the bed that she used to share with Phil. So Phil, as you can imagine, he himself was very educated. When Rose tries to play the piano badly, a bit like Deliverance, he outdoes her on the banjo, because he is an educated man, but he has decided to choose the life of the cowboy, to embrace the dirt and the horses, because of his close friendship with Bronco Henry, a now deceased cowhand who he was very close to. Okay. So everything comes to a terrible tension when Peter comes, the young boy, comes back from boarding school to the ranch for a summer, and the tension mounts and the menace mounts. It's terrific.
Okay, fantastic. And that's going in cinemas now, but it's coming out on Netflix as well, which is the way of a lot of things these days, so that's good. Okay, now to get us away from hearing too much plot about films that we're potentially never going to watch, Owen, something everyone can get on board with here. BBC Two on Friday, Freddie Mercury, The Final Act. And of course, it is about 30 years next week, isn't it?
It is since his death, which of course he only announced just prior to it that he had in fact tested HIV positive. He was dead within 24 hours. This is interesting because obviously, if you turn on BBC, I think once a month you're going to end up with something Queen related. But this picks up where Bohemian Rhapsody leaves off, and it puts the context right around the Freddie Mercury story. It starts off in 86 after, you know, they had done Live Aid, fantastic, brilliant, they're back. They had their massive tour in support of A Kind of Magic. They're at Wembley Stadium, they're at Nebworth. He announces to the band he doesn't want to tour anymore for obvious reasons, or obvious reasons. Now, the band being very English and being very mannered, etc., etc., didn't inquire as to why he might want to stop touring. And of course, he doesn't actually tell the band members overtly until about 1990, or thereabouts, when they're in Switzerland recording what turned out to be their final album during his lifetime. But of course, Brendan, they recorded an entire album prior to that. He went off and did Barcelona with Montserrat Caballé. He had his own solo career and all the sort of stuff going on. He was remarkably driven, obviously, because he could hear the clock ticking. But what this documentary does is put that kind of story out there properly, with contributions from Brian May and from Roger Taylor and from Anita Dobson and from other people, obviously his peers. But also it, and this again I'm thinking of kind of the post It's a Sin, remember that great series earlier this year? It chronicles, particularly in the UK, the 10 years between 81 and 91 when Freddie Mercury died, and 81 when the first AIDS cases in Britain were diagnosed, that and 9 million people, 90% of the 10 million people who contracted HIV in that time period died as a result of it. It tells those stories, and it's heartbreaking. The first person accounts of either in archive and those who survived and those who lost loved ones, etc. It is... bring a hanky for those bits. Okay. But also then the third act rather strangely kind of brings you up to the Freddie Mercury tribute gig, which was in 92, which is to raise awareness and stuff. And that's why you get your Roger Daltreys and your Lisa Stansfield and all those performers who performed that day. But Joe Elliott is worth the price of admission alone for some of the rock and roll backstage stories. But it's doing three things at once, but particularly in terms of the AIDS crisis, it's heartbreaking.
Super. Okay, that sounds great. Freddie Mercury, The Final Act, BBC Two on Friday. Kay, Bake Off final is on this Tuesday. Who knew it comes around so quickly? I've never watched more than like 2 minutes of Bake Off.
Why
is it
not?
Good this year? Can you catch us up?
It's terrific. Then there were three. So the three finalists in the Great British Bake Off are now known. Last week, we lost Jürgen. Now, Jürgen was German, a German baker, and he was kind of humorless. Like, he had his own sense of humour. He's kind of giggling to his patisseries, but he didn't really kind of get Noel Fielding's humour. So that was kind of interesting in itself. So now so when everybody else got a handshake, and this is really important, when you do really brilliantly, Paul Hollywood gives you a handshake. That means, I don't know, the touch of his hand is so wonderful. And then, so now we have three. We've Christelle, who everybody thinks Paul has put through because he fancies her, which is so unfair because she's really gifted. Chigs, who only started baking last year. And then Giuseppe, who is really excellent baker. He's Italian, but his Leaning Tower of Pisa was a bit pale and lonely standing in comparison to Chigs and Christelle, who really, I mean, Chigs made these plums. Well, they were apples, but they just looked like plums. So I think Chigs could easily sneak it because he's just started baking and everybody likes an underdog. Though Christelle is a very exotic baker, and obviously Giuseppe is the favourite.
So all to play for at the Great British Bake Off Final, Channel 4, Tuesday at 8 p.m. Owen, the new Game of Thrones is on Amazon Prime, and I think they've started now. They put up like three or four episodes to get you in, and then one a week kind of thing. So tell us about the Wheel of Time.
Yes, is there a Game of Thrones shaped gap in your life? If there is, this is tailor made, Brendan, to fill it. It is based on Robert Jordan's novel series, of which there are 14 novels, I think, each of which clocking in at around 800 plus pages. So this is an entire world to delve into. So there's a lot of exposition. There are a lot of names that you might need to catch up on and turn. Terminology, etc., etc. It follows essentially Meereen, who's played by Rosamund Pike, who's brilliant, and she kind of carries the bulk of the narrative weight. She's a member of this powerful organisation of women called the Aes Sedai, blah, blah, blah. A lot of these words you kind of need to see written down in books because it makes more sense. When people verbalise these phrases that you don't have any kind of reference point for, it can get quite confusing, as you might imagine. Anyway,
So hang on a minute. Is anyone going to be able to get into this?
Can I tell you a little story about this? Because I was watching episode 2, right, and they get across this river away from the Trollocs, who are kind of these orc-like creatures. It's a bit like the Hobbit world mixed with Game of Thrones world. Anyway, they get across this river, and then your man kind of goes back to try and save his son, but he dies and stuff. And this is genuinely what happened to me, and I'm watching it and they're kind of going, oh, you know, the young people, because of course it's a road movie aspect to it. So she, as this brave and wise wizard, witch, let's call her that, is trailing these four people across the Westlands or whatever it's called. Anyway, they kind of go, one of them goes, oh, you didn't have to let that Furriman die. And I went, the Furriman? What's the Furriman? And then I realised, Brendan, they were saying ferryman, and so it wasn't a different type of creature, it was actually his job description. So yeah, that's the kind of world you're going into. Come here, I'll probably stick with it. There's, you know, it's got that medieval shtick. In fact, their spring festival's called Beltane. See what they did there? There's lots of portentous dialogue, for example. You think you know this world, you know nothing. Which is a brave phrase to utter, because if you know anything about Game of Thrones, you know nothing, Jon Snow is kind of one of the catchphrases of the series. You know, there's place names like Two Rivers, White Tower, and they probably could have done without a big massive wall at one point in one of the three episodes, but...
Okay. Is it going to click? Is it going to take off?
It's been renewed already. I think it probably will. I mean, it's Amazon, so they're throwing a lot of money behind it. It's not cheap, but I'll stick with it and see what happens. But whether they'll get 5 or 6 or 7 series out of it, as I say, 14 books, 800 plus pages, they could go anywhere.
This could go on for years, potentially. Okay, thank you very much, Owen Sweeney, and thank you, Kay Sheehy. Dan texted to say, the morning show season 2 is awful. Steve Carell is the best thing about the show, and his absence has foreshadowed its demise. There's plenty of Steve Carell in the second season, and it jumps the shark a little bit, but I thought it was pretty good, Dan, anyway. All right, listen, that's it for today. Just a reminder, you can listen back to all items from today's show on our podcast at rte.ie/Brendan. Today's show was produced by Owen McLaughlin, Research was by Katrina McFadden. Louise Kerr-Ross was our broadcast coordinator. Mark McGrath was on sound. And the series producer is Anne Farrell. So we'll finish up today with a little bit of Freddie. Freddie had his first solo number one 2 years after he died, actually. And it was with Living On My Own. Don't be, you know what? I think this could be the best 3 minutes of your day. Don't be afraid to get up and have a little jump around or a little sing along with this, okay? And I'll talk to you next week.
Sometimes I feel I'm gonna break down and cry.